Hey everyone, and welcome to this part two of our first Snake Oilers special for 2018. My name's Patrick Gray. Snake Oilers is a wholly sponsored podcast where vendors pay to pitch their tech at you, the listeners. The way I describe it is we get them into this podcast and encourage them to sell the steak and not the sizzle, as per normal marketing tactics. They come here, they tell us what they actually do from a nuts and bolts perspective, so that you can see if that's something you need. Last week, we heard from Rapid7, Mimecast, and VMray, and this week, we've got two more pitches for you. First of all, we're going to hear from Pen10, an Australian-based company that is doing some genuinely interesting stuff with HoneyDocs. I guess you could call them a cyber deception play, but, you know, those words together make me cringe a bit. But whatever you call it, it is interesting stuff, and we'll be hearing about that in a minute. Also in this edition, we'll be chatting with the team at Trend Micro, and this isn't really about pitching a product, this section. They're more here to combat messaging coming out of newer EDR and endpoint security companies who are portraying established vendors like them as out of touch. As listeners would know, beating up the incumbent AV companies is actually one of my hobbies. So basically, Trend Micro's Eric Skinner and Eric Schulz will be along this week to tell me why I'm an idiot. They're also going to make a strong case for independent AV testing. It's something the industry has struggled with for a long time. It's just sort of never happened, but they say they want it to happen more than ever, and they're actually optimistic about that. That is coming up in a little while, but yes, first up, it is time for a chat with Ben Whittam of Australian firm Pen10. They're a small-ish firm with about 45 staff that does a lot of work in the defence industry here in Australia and the defence world, and they've just developed a product called TrapDocs. It's a different take on HoneyDocs. Ben has a great explanation of what TrapDocs actually does, so I'll just drop you in here and let Ben Whittam of Pen10 explain what TrapDocs is all about. Enjoy.
Look, so TrapDocs is, in a nutshell, it's about a project to use machine learning to create highly realistic honey files that sort of match the content and authorship and structure of the surrounding files. And we're trying to do this in a way that's low impact to you and also your team who has to do the work to manage and look at what gets touched.
Okay, so what you're doing is you're scanning a file share directory and then what, using some sort of Markov bot to reconstruct a document that looks like it's looks like it belongs in that directory? Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's exactly where we started from when we first looked at the problem. The product itself now ships in a VM. You connect the VM to one or more file repositories, like SharePoint or Windows Share. You give it rights to read and create files. It will go through the content and then learn the structure and the authorship and the documents content, and then and use that information to reconstruct and create the documents. We started with things like Markov chains, but now we've advanced that to other machine learning techniques in order to look at things like, you know, how do we create words and sentences? How do we create and pick the right usernames? How do we choose timestamps that are appropriate? You know, and how we just learn important things from within the context and the content to sort of make it as realistic as possible.
Now, I suppose we should explain something, which is, you know, the traditional HoneyDocs approach is to add some form of beaconing into perhaps legitimate documents. In fact, we even saw through the Vault 7 release via WikiLeaks that the CIA had automatic software designed to do precisely that. What makes this approach different is that you're actually writing new, completely bogus files that look legit to the file system so that then you can actually catch the file access by monitoring, you know, file access logs, and you can then pump them into some pretty simple, you can then convert them into some pretty simple SIEM rules. I mean, that seems to be the thinking here, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we started with this at 1.0 where you're just using your existing data, and that's great. But the problem is you're actually exposing your real data. I mean, you want these things to be stolen so you can ultimately track where they go. The challenge is making them real, but making sure you're not putting your data in context so that someone can understand what you're doing. And that's part of the challenge with creating these machine learning techniques is we can't just simply use a Markov chain where we're just selecting a word based on what we've seen previously. We also have to make sure that we're also mixing things up a little bit so we don't keep that information in the same context and expose what you're trying to protect.
So when some sort of crawler in the enterprise comes through to index that file, like, does that set something off? When a user accidentally accesses the file because they think it's something else, does that set it off? I'm wondering, I can see a potential risk here is going to be false positives. What have you done to address that?
Yeah, look, firstly, what we found is the false positives are remarkably low, specifically when you tune out things like backup processes out of the system. Real users don't actually touch their files in a sequential manner when they're looking for the data. You know, they actually have a very good idea about where they've stored the information that's important and what the structure is, even if they go back after a couple of years. So that's, you know, that's one aspect. The second is that you've got this seam to do this correlation of information between when a file gets touched and whether it's a honey file. You actually use the seam when you pair it with behavioral-based analytics. It actually is quite helpful there as well. You can really prioritize and reduce the number of false positives you get. You know, we want to be looking at something if it's a masqueraded attack and then understand what the user did previously and compare that to their normal behavioral patterns.
So even if it's a legit user, you might say, well, this is way outside the envelope for what we consider normal for this particular user or box.
That's exactly right. And we can do two things. We can either look at the alerts associated with honey files, or we can seed more deception when we're unsure that the user is who they are.
Now, I understand this is deployed as a VM. You just give it a bunch of creds for your file shares and off it goes, just seeding these documents automatically after it's sort of indexed each directory and built up the knowledge it requires to generate convincing, you know, well, documents that at least look convincing at a first pass. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's absolutely spot on. And, you know, you also have the ability to add, you know, make sure you add the credentials for where you need to send the seam logs. And you can also interact with your antivirus and your AV systems as well to provide signatures attached to the honey files you've created. And that allows you then to track if the honey files have been exfiltrated from removable media or if they've been emailed off the system. And also helps us find out if somebody's copied and pasted them somewhere else. We can get an idea of where they've gone or what's happening to them.
So the idea being if users all of a sudden start grabbing *** out of a directory, their own desktop AV is going to catch it. That's pretty novel.
Yeah, well, that's what we hope. The idea here is that we don't necessarily want to capture as well those users that are just doing mass exfil. You know, we could use a very simpler honey file for that process. You know, the real idea here is that we're creating content that's highly realistic that matches the surrounding files. What we want to do is learn what the adversary is after. So files are related to a particular type of finance record. If they get touched, then we get them after that. And if we see that no HR data gets touched or no other IP that we thought might be what the adversary is after, it gives us a great picture of what they're interested in. And that's the advantage of creating realistic content.
Now, this is sort of ninja level, a ninja level type of tool that I would expect would be most appealing to those operating high security environments. I understand, you know, being based in Canberra, you do a fair bit of work with defence contractors and whatnot. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, we thought this idea would only be for people that are the most paranoid. But what we've found is when we're speaking to other organisations outside of those traditional markets that Pen10 is involved in, you know, a really fantastic desire to try something that hopefully provides an essential free kick, you know, something that requires a low amount of administration to look after and will produce high value and a low number of alerts is something that is a lot of interest to people. And we know from talking to you before, I think, about the fact that, you know, antivirus systems and IDS and SIEMs on many of our commonplace cybersecurity systems, you know, had their origin in the same place, you know, where we all thought it was only for the most paranoid to use, and now they're very much commonplace. So we're excited by this. We know it's forward-leaning, but we expect this to be something that's going to be increasingly important for users in the future.
Which industry verticals have you actually had some success with when it comes to actually selling this thing? Is this in beta? Is it rolled out already? Like, what's the current status of the product?
Yeah, look, we're approaching a beta, so you know, we haven't had widespread application and touching for across the marketplace. primarily we've been focusing our main core sets of users, but we're taking the product and the discussion to RSA in April, which will be very exciting. We have had a conversation with a small number of organisations across different sectors, such as manufacturing, finance, and telecommunications, and all the conversations have been positive. We're going to run a beta program when we come back from RSA in April. We're looking to talk to more organisations that want to trial and see how this technology works within their organisation.
Okay. And have you got any active trials out there already?
We do. And we want to try and make sure we're going to be careful about releasing the results of somebody else's organisation. But look, we're encouraged by the results. There is a big challenge with running deception campaigns is that unlike when you put an IDS on a network for the very first time, you can instantly see results. With a deception-based approach, you do need to apply some time to really see the effectiveness of the solution.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've had that conversation with Haroon, right, when it comes to hardware honeypots. And, you know, he might get an email maybe a few weeks or even a couple of months after someone's put it in and going, yeah, that stuff came in handy. Can't really tell you anymore, but thanks. Cheers.
Yeah, and look, that's a real bit of a challenge. So we've got to think in broader sort of timescales for trials. You know, I really think 6 months is really a sort of time frame that makes the most amount of sense.
Maybe you should price on events, you know, like price at $1,000 per alert, you know, bargain at twice the price.
Oh,
innovative pricing, right, Ben. Well. Innovative pricing. Think outside the box, man. All right, the company is Penten. The product is Trapdox. Ben Whittam, thank you very much for joining us on Snake Oilers to pitch this stuff. It sounds very interesting, and we wish you the best of luck at RSA. Listeners who are interested can go check out your booth and talk to you, Ben, because I understand you'll be there. I guess we'll catch up with you later on and find out how it all went.
Thank you very much.
That was Ben Whittam of Trapdox there. Big thanks to him for that. And I've linked through to Penten's website in the show notes for this podcast. So do check them out there if that tech floats your boat. Okay, so it's time for a chat with Trend Micro now. As many listeners would know, I've been a critic. There's been many people in InfoSec who've been critics of the established AV vendors over the years, but our next two guests are here to fight against that narrative. They're going to put forward the case that next-generation vendors' marketing claims are kind of disingenuous. Sure, a couple of newer vendors were very successful with some fresh approaches, but they say don't believe the hype. Trend has innovated itself and is now providing customers with EDR features that they feel the market needs. The key point they want to get across is that contrary to the narratives being peddled by some of the newer companies, Trend says it is not resting on incumbency as a business strategy. Eric Skinner is Trend's VP of Solution Marketing, and Eric Schultz is a product manager there. They both joined me to talk over the perception war in the AV and EDR space. First up, here's Eric Skinner kicking things off by defining the messaging war in the space, and here's what he had to say.
There's obviously been a lot of energy from new market entrants in the EDR space, in the next-gen space, and it's been easy to take punches at the established vendors, people like Trend, who are on millions of endpoints out there, and try to make it sound like really what those vendors are doing is just AV signatures from 20 years ago. But clearly we're not, otherwise we'd be out of business by now. It would be complete insanity for us to not have kept up with the times with respect to the kinds of threats that are out there and what's going to work to detect them. So we feel like the industry is actually converging a lot more rapidly than those vendors' marketing would let on.
Yeah. Now that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because I get the sense that the incumbent vendors to a degree did get caught with their pants down when it came to this, you know, EDR trend. It did very much seem to be the next generation vendors, the new vendors that drove this, but there has been a pretty rapid response, hasn't there?
Yeah, I think I would divide it into two categories. So what people are looking for from EDR, when we talk to people, it's frequently a split between wanting a lot more effective detection of threats than whatever they're using on their endpoints right now, or maybe to supplement it. And then there is an investigative aspect. And on the investigative side, I would definitely give the EDR vendors credit. They've bought a lot of, they've brought a lot of interesting new functionality to the table. And you know, they've been thinking about what is going to be useful for a SOC team to do the investigations and people.
Well, I think to a degree, I mean, this convergence kind of happened because there were firms that were doing the EDR stuff that didn't have the AV component, and they realized that adding antivirus to their sort of detection and response stuff was the easiest way to actually get on the desktop in the first place and to sell it. So it's this funny sort of situation where you've had people develop this completely different software and then realize, well, hang on, if we bundle it with AV, we could kind of, become that agent that way and make the sale that way.
Well, sure. I mean, part of the strategy has been to pitch that you can sit on top of the AV and then gradually displace it. But part of that comes along with saying that you're doing a lot of detection that the AV isn't doing, when really there's actually a fair bit of heavy overlap. If you think about the detection that's necessary today, no one from Trend anyway is going to argue that you should be relying on signatures for detection. It's clearly a threat landscape out there that demands a range of advanced techniques. And this is stuff that hasn't happened overnight in response to EDR vendors. It's happened in a gradual evolution since the last, 20 years. So when you look at what we're doing now in the product, around advanced detection, both for pre-execution or runtime detection, it's dramatically more than what would have been there 15 years ago, but it didn't happen overnight.
Mm. Now, we also have with us Eric Schultz, who is working on the product management team for the endpoint security products at Trend. Eric, tell us what you're doing. Like, I mean, this show is all about pitching, you know, a unique selling point for the vendors that choose to participate. You've got the attention of thousands of listeners right now. What do you want to tell them about, you know, what you believe makes your stuff good?
Yeah, so I think what differentiates us is there's a few different things. One, it's not just like Eric said, it's not just signatures by any means. There's a lot of advanced engines in the product from multiple types of machine learning, both pre-execution as well as runtime machine learning, which is rather unique. There's only a few other vendors that I've seen that are doing that. Stuff we're doing around virtual patching, blocking threats before they can even get to the endpoint. And then also just behavioral analytics, behavioral analysis when stuff is running, which allows us to detect and quarantine and kill, in many cases, restore ransomware encrypted files so the user really loses nothing in the end. We're also doing some stuff in the fileless space as well, since that seems to be taking off a lot more, PowerShell, etc.
Interesting. Can you tell me more about what you're doing there? Because that is like, you know, just the PowerShell stuff, because it's all native, is like, it's kind of a difficult problem, that one.
It is. So a lot of that is done with our runtime detections where, you know, at some point the code has to come out of its hiding shell and it's got to actually start acting malicious. And with the behavioral engines, we're able to start seeing when it's doing things that we wouldn't expect, be it editing host files, be it adding new registry entries that it shouldn't be adding, stuff like that. And we're able to take action on that and kill it, kill that process before, you know, the system is completely compromised, and in many cases roll that back so that the system isn't compromised.
Yeah. Now, look, Eric Skinner, we had a bit of a chat earlier about this idea of, you know, something you'd like to see out there in the market, which is independent third-party testing of EDR, of you know, endpoint security software. That's been something like, you know, I'm not holding my breath for that because every time we've seen, some sort of some group of antivirus companies come together and try to fund this work, what happens is whoever doesn't come on the top of the ladder just withdraws funding and the whole thing falls over. But you're hopeful that this might happen sometime soon.
Well, I think that we have to not give up hope on this. I know that part of that perspective sounds idealistic, but what I come back to is that there's so much marketing noise from all the vendors in this space it's difficult for customers to figure out what to purchase because it all starts sounding the same. Everyone has long lists of engines and features and deep learning this and runtime detection that. And at the end of the day, what matters is, does it work? So short of people learning how to do this themselves, which has, I think, a number of substantial challenges, What we have to do as a vendor community and as a customer community is encourage the test labs that are getting better and better at doing this. And it's not going to be perfect, but the tests are getting better. We're witnessing this. We are seeing some of the test labs do more and more to be more independent and to make the tests more substantial, make them harder. If you look back or to a number of even the more credible tests over the last few years, everyone scores 99% detection, and it's not really helping anyone to see that, other than potentially challenging the perspective that comes forward when vendors do their own private tests. But when the labs are throwing more complex samples, more real world samples, enriching their methodology, and making a demonstrable effort to stay arm's length from where the financing comes from, this is going to help everybody. Yeah, it's not going to magically get fixed, but we do see it improving, and we want to encourage people who are doing that.
I mean, you've got the analyst community as well, and I do know that Trend Micro had a substantial amount of time in the magic quadrant sun, you know, over the last couple of years with these products. But there's only so much stock you can put into Gartner reports because they don't really cover off technical testing.
Yeah, they and Eric and I are both intimately involved in the response for those reports, so we know how much work is involved on the vendor end in responding. Sometimes people think, oh, you just pay Gartner a lot of money and you get a good position, and it really doesn't work that way. The amount of information that Gartner or Forrester or whoever is synthesizing is tremendous, but you're right, they're not testing the products themselves. And in particular in this area of effectiveness, they believe in it, but they're not doing effectiveness testing. What they're doing is starting to put a little bit more weight on people who are leveraging those tests, participating in the tests, and they have some of the same concerns as you, right? It's how much stock can you put in them? But they believe that it's important that vendors participate at the very least.
Eric Schultz, back to you. I'm just curious if you can tell us a little bit more about, you know, we spoke about the prevention and detection side just a moment ago, but what can you tell us about like the EDR side of what Trend's doing and how that might differ from what companies like CrowdStrike and Carbon Black are doing?
Yeah, so on the EDR side, I mean, many don't think of us traditionally as a EDR player. I mean, we do have offerings in this space, part of our platform, but providing things like the root cause analysis, the impact assessment, the standard stuff that you're expecting from an EDR vendor, many of the incumbents, including, you know, vendors like Trend Micro, we already have that in our product, in our portfolio, that, you know, you don't have to necessarily buy an EDR product or a add-on product, I should say, to get these features. They are in, you know, many of the AV or the incumbent endpoint products that are already out there today, including ours.
I'm curious too, like how much of your code base has, like percentage-wise, has actually changed in the last 5 years? Like, have there been ground-up rebuilds of certain components, or is it broadly the same framework that has just been evolving over time?
So I think it's a combination of both. There's definitely some stuff that has been just, you know, being added on and improved and you know, optimized where possible over time. And there's also stuff that's net new build from the ground engines because, you know, the threat landscape is changing and we're adapting, building new engines for new types of threats as we need to. So I really think it's a combination of, you know, having stuff that's now been very heavily optimized over Trend's, you know, lifetime, as well as stuff that's being built, you know, day in and day out from scratch to address these new threats.
Yeah, when I look at our list of threat detection capabilities from 5 years ago versus what we have now, it's probably double in size. And a lot of that comes down to constant refinement about what is being effective, because we're obviously measuring the effectiveness of all of these things in the current threat landscape. So there is a huge amount of new code, and some stuff gets retired when we see that it's not helping anymore. So there are new techniques, and we are strong believers in having multiple techniques without bogging down the endpoint, right? Obviously, you don't want to slow things to a crawl, but we're leveraging a range of techniques because we know that people do evasion of individual techniques. We see it all the time, right? We have multiple techniques, so we see stuff that is evading, for example, an ML engine, but then gets picked up by a different engine, maybe the anti-exploit engine or something on the behavioral side. So multiple techniques are absolutely helping the customer in that respect. They also help us with respect to reduction in false positives because we're able to filter out lots of noise. We do still detect a vast volume of threats with older techniques. And what that means is we're not subjecting the more CPU intensive engines and the engines that are more subject to false positives to looking at the complete onslaught.
So it's about tuning, I guess.
It's ongoing tuning. This is exactly what happens. So every time we're releasing the product, we're tuning those engines. We are removing ones that are useless. We are adding new capability. And so it's built in a modular way. These same engines that we're using on the endpoint, these are the things that we use in our service security product line, deep security. There are things we use in our email gateways. And it's typically a very similar mix with some differences based on the attack vectors. So the engine development engineering, this is a huge investment, a trend, and it's ongoing. And it's a very different list of capabilities from 5 years ago.
Okay, Eric Schultz, Eric Skinner, thank you very much for joining us on Snake Oilers to present the case for, you know, an AV vendor that's been around for a while who is saying, look, we do EDR too. It's not just all the new fancy pants 2.0 people. We've got that stuff too. And I'd imagine you would want people to go and check out Trend's latest lines and just at least have a look for them for themselves. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us. It's been interesting.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was Eric Skinner and Eric Schultz of Trend Micro there. Big thanks to them for that. And that is it for the first Snake Oilers edition of 2018. We have another 3 editions for the year. There are 20 slots total and 16 of them are already allocated. Our first available Snake Oilers slot for a new sponsor is in August. If you want to snap it up, contact sales@whiskey.biz. I'll be back in a couple of days with the regular weekly show, but until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.